Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. Greetings, gamer, and welcome to Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. The longer you GM, the easier it is to fall into bad habits. What are some of the signs you're slipping and becoming a lazy GM? And what are some strategies you can use to keep your game mastering at peak performance? Join me on the journey as I explore these questions. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 20 of Game Master's Journey. I'm Lex Starwalker, and I'm transmitting this message from the Obsidian Monolith, somewhere outside of time and space. So I'm really excited to do this episode today. This is a topic I've been wanting to talk about for a while. So being a lazy GM is something that I wrestle with personally. It's something that I've been kind of dealing with for, the last year or so. I started out GMing when I was in high school, and I was very much into it, very much enjoyed it. I would spend hours and hours preparing for my gaming sessions and coming up with NPCs and coming up with cool descriptions. I was very lucky. I think the first time I saw anyone GM was in a game store, and this fellow was running Dungeons and Dragons, and this was before I'd ever even played an RPG. And he was one of those GMs that, first of all, GM standing up, which I think is a good thing to do if you can do that. Really helps with the energy level. But he stood up. He was very animated. He was very descriptive. They were doing a combat, and he was very descriptive as far as what was going on and describing each move and feint and attack, and just put you in the scene. And so that was my first exposure to a dungeon master, and I was really impressed with what he was doing. And he wasn't doing any accents or voices or anything like that. And so when I first started out, that's what I tried to do myself. I kind of used him as a model for how I wanted to GM. But what ended up happening is, over the years and years and years of GMing, I started to become lazy and started to develop some bad habits. And this especially, I think, really happened when I took a few years off of gaming and then came back to it. And when I look back, that's where I really see that my GMing kind of went down a few notches in quality. I think part of it was that's when I got into Pathfinder. And I was watching a lot of D&D 4th edition and a lot of Pathfinder actual plays on YouTube. And, that was not good GMing, what I was seeing. It was very much, lazy GMing, lack of descriptions, just really tactical play. And, the old adage, garbage in, garbage out, right? So I was seeing that, and, that was kind of what was fresh in my mind. And I forgot how I used to do things, and I forgot that guy from way back when in high school that really impressed me with how he ran a game. And it was only recently, in the last year or so, that I kind of realized what I was doing. And the reason this actually happened was because I started putting my games on YouTube, and I would watch myself. And by the way, if you want to improve as a GM, that's the best way, is record yourself audio and video, if you can do video, and watch yourself. You will learn so much about what you're doing that you like and what you're doing that you don't like. And I watched myself and realized I wasn't describing anything. I was being so lazy. So I know from things that I've learned in other areas of my life that as mammals, we are inherently lazy. This is just human nature. It's mammal nature. And if you do not resist this tendency, it will overtake you. Think about it. If you have a dog, you have to walk your dog, right? You have to take your dog out twice a day and walk your dog. Your dog isn't going to go walk himself. You know, now once you get the dog out there walking, he loves it, right? But as mammals, we'll just lay and sit and eat and relax all day if you let us. So we need something kind of driving us to do more. If you work out or you run, right? I mean, you have to do that. It doesn't just happen. And there are probably days where you have to force yourself to go to the gym or you have to force yourself to take your run and you really, really don't want to do it. And it's work just to make yourself do it. So we all have this kind of inherent laziness and some of us are better than others at resisting that. So what do I mean when I talk about being a lazy game master? What do I mean about that? Well, there are a few areas for myself where I see lazy GMing rearing its head. And all of this honestly comes from my own self-evaluations, looking at myself as a GM, and like I said, seeing things that I don't like about what I'm doing and things I can improve on. So that's where this is coming from, more than, you know, being critical of other GMs. Although I will say that, you know, these things that I see in myself, I see in other GMs as well, which is why I think it's a good topic for the show, because this is something that we all struggle with, or we will all struggle with if you're not already. And another reason I decided to do this episode is I watch Nerdarchy on YouTube, and they do a lot of D&D stuff. And they, I don't know that they did a whole video about this, but they've mentioned in a few different videos, you know, lazy GMing and how not to be a lazy GM. And so I know that they wrestle with this, and I know that a lot of their listeners wrestle with this. So we're gonna talk about this and see if we can come up with some strategies to do better. So there are a couple assumptions here that I'm making about you, the listener, that I'm assuming that you have these things in common with me. And if you do, then this is a relevant topic for you. And if you don't, it may not be. So my first assumption is that you enjoy GMing, that you like being the game master and you're choosing to be the game master. Now, if you're in a situation where you're just the only one in your group of friends that'll do it, and you're just doing it because you have to, you know, maybe you don't care, right? I'm also assuming that you want to be the best GM that you can be. I'm assuming that you want to improve your craft over time, or at the very least, that you want to stay where you're at and not lose what you've got already, right? You don't want to degrade over time as far as your GMing skills. And I'm also assuming that you, like me, feel that you owe it to your players to give them the best sessions that you can, you know? And I know not everybody agrees with me on that, but I feel very strongly that part of taking on the mantle of the Game Master, for me personally, is a, I don't know if I want to say obligation, but, you know, I owe it to my players to give them a good game and not half-ass it. And that's just how I feel about it. So one area that you can see lazy GMing rear its head, and one area that you can focus on to avoid lazy GMing or to just improve your GMing overall, is in game preparation. Now, it's only natural that as you become more skilled and more experienced as a GM and you become more proficient with whatever game system that you're running, that you're going to need less time to prepare for your game sessions, right? You know, you get the rules down, you don't need to look those up anymore before the game. You know, you get really good at being a GM, and it takes less time to achieve the same results as far as game preparation. However, if we're not careful, we can take this too far and our game will suffer for it. Now, personally, it becomes very obvious to me during a session when I haven't prepared for class properly. If you're wondering right now, well, how much should I prepare, or how do I know how much I should prepare? Pay attention to what you're thinking and what you're feeling when you're running a session and after you run a session, and you will know if you prepared enough. And this is going to be different for everybody, right? We're all different and we all have different skill sets. So, you know, the amount of time I put into a game session may not be the same as the amount of time that you put into it. So you need to evaluate yourself based on your own standards and what works for you. Again, the easiest way to know is, how do you feel about it? What are you thinking while you're running the game and after you run the game? So for instance, you're running your game, let's say you're running D&D or whatever, and you're doing a combat and the PCs are fighting some monsters or whatever. Do you feel awkward in the combat because maybe you're not as familiar with what the monster's abilities are as you think you should be? Are you killing the pacing of the combat because you're having to read through a stat block or whatever and figure out how something works or figure out what the monster is going to do on this turn? Do you later, after the combat is over, realize that there were things the monster could have or should have done that you forgot about, or maybe you just didn't notice that they could do that? If those kinds of things are happening, that's a sign that you did not prepare as much as you should have. Do you have to look up rules or instead make rulings on the fly for situations you knew were coming? This is another sign that you haven't prepared. So, for example, let's say you know in this next gaming session there's going to be underwater combat. The PCs are going to be underwater. They're going to have to fight things. You know this is going to happen. But when it comes up in the game, you realize you have no clue how swimming works, how drowning works, how long the PCs can hold their breath, things like that. You have no idea how that works in your game. Well, obviously, you know, that's something you could have figured out ahead of time, right? And now you're going to either destroy your pacing because you're going to have to stop things to look that up, or you're going to have to make something up on the fly, which, you know, it's fine if you have to do that, but professional people spend a lot of time designing and developing these games, so I tend to like to use what they come up with as far as mechanics as often as I can, unless there's just something I really don't like about them. And I save coming up with things on the fly for when I have to, or when a situation comes up that isn't covered by the rules. So most games will have some kind of way of determining how long a character can hold their breath, and maybe you have a PC where the player has specifically built that character because he wants him to be a good swimmer, and he knows by the rules that he can hold his breath for X amount of time. And because you don't know the rules and you didn't take time to look that up before the game, you come up with something on the fly that's different. And now that player is unhappy because things aren't working the way he thought they would or he thought they should. Another example is, you know that one of your PCs is a rogue, but the first time he wants to attack out of stealth, you're not sure how that works. And that's actually something that happened with me in my D&D game. You know, the first time I ran 5th edition, I had a character that was a rogue, and surprise, surprise, he wanted to do a sneak attack, and I realized that I wasn't sure how that worked in the new edition. So, you know, that's an example of where I should have seen that ahead of time when I was preparing for that session. It should have occurred to me, oh, I have a rogue, he's going to sneak attack, I should have some understanding of how that works so I don't have to deal with it in game, right? So another way to know if you're not prepared is, do you find that you're not as familiar with your NPCs as you feel like you should be? Do all your NPCs kind of seem the same because you didn't take time to think about their personality and their mannerisms before the session? Do you realize that you forgot to come up with some treasure or the equivalent for your PCs? Does a PC ask a question that you should have anticipated and yet you don't have an answer for that because you didn't think about it? So, of course, yes, you can, in any of these situations, you can ad lib. You can come up with something on the fly. But I feel that it's best to save that for when you really need it. The more you can prepare ahead of time, the more you can save your ad lib chops for when you really need them. For instance, when a PC throws you a curveball. And there's some reasons for this. You know, it's a truism in writing that the first few ideas you come up with are going to be cliches and you should throw those out. Like, as many as the first 2, 3, 4, 5 ideas that you come up with are going to be something you saw in a movie or something you read in a book or an iteration of that. It's going to be a cliche. It's going to be something people have seen 100 times, and you should throw those out until you come up with something really cool. So when you're ad-libbing as a GM, you're often, if not always, running with these cliches, these first few ideas that you get, I mean, think of it. Do you, as a GM at the table, when the players are looking at you for an answer, do you take time to come up with six ideas before you give them an answer? Or do you roll with the first thing that pops into your head, or the second or the third thing that pops into your head? So, you know, if you're always doing that, then you're going to have a lot of cliches in your game and a lot of kind of unoriginal stuff. So if you're not prepared as a GM, you will know it. You won't need your players to tell you, although they might tell you, but you'll know it if you're paying attention, because you're going to have thoughts and feelings of regret either during or after the session, or both. You'll have thoughts like, you know, that really could have been a lot better if only dot, dot, dot. If only I'd looked up that monster beforehand, or if only I'd looked up what that spell the NPC can cast beforehand, or if only I'd come up with the rewards for my PCs beforehand instead of just rolling for them randomly, or whatever. So you'll know. Another area where we can find laziness rearing its head, and another area that we can just work on in general to improve as GMs, is the very important area of description. So this is a big one. Nothing enhances immersion and player buy-in like a good description, and nothing will suck the soul and fun out of your game like lack of description. Often the difference between an awesome session and one that devolves into a tactical miniatures game is simply the amount of description that's given. And this is something I've seen in my games as a GM. If I am not giving any descriptions, if I'm just being very basic as far as what's going on, and everything's happening in this white mist with no description of what's around, then it becomes a very two-dimensional game, and it's not nearly as much fun for me or the players. And this is something that I think becomes more and more of an issue with experience as a GM, because, for instance, you know, we've described kobolds 100 times. So it's easy to say you're attacked by some kobolds and leave it at that. You know, it's hard that 101st time to really describe what a kobold looks like. Now, the guys at Nerdarchy made a great point here, and that oftentimes your experienced players can actually exacerbate this tendency. So, for instance, you're trying to describe a scary creature to your players, and one of the players goes, "Oh, that's an Ettin," completely killing your momentum, killing your description, letting the cat out of the bag for any new players that didn't know it was an Ettin, and taking something from like a vivid, evocative experience to words and numbers on a page, a stat block. Oh, it's an Ettin. So do not let your players get away with this. If this happens, squash it right away. Let your players know that that is not cool. For one thing, they should be separating player knowledge from character knowledge. And for another thing, even if that player knows it's an Ettin, or even if that PC knows it's an Ettin, the player should have the respect for you as game master to let you finish your description and not interrupt you with the, "Oh, I know the answer" thing. This is one that the Nerdarchy guys did talk about quite a bit, and I totally agree. Especially if you're an experienced GM with experienced players, it's really easy to say you're attacked by 5 goblins and not describe anything at all, because we all know what a goblin is. But that's not evocative. That's not going to pull anybody into your story. So even if everybody at the table knows what the thing is, don't just say the thing is this. Describe it. Let the players inside their minds make the connection, "Oh, this is a goblin," or "This is an orc." Don't just use that word. Use a description. Now, this could really be an issue in combat. It can be really hard to be descriptive with every monster and NPC attack, but you really should be, or try to be. You know, try very hard to do this as much as you can, and encourage your players to be descriptive as well. And this is something where the players can really help you, and you can really help the players. You know, have a conversation outside the game, outside of character, with your players, and say, "Look, you know, I've been running games for a long time, and it's really easy for me to kind of get into this rut of just, you know, you attack with your sword, you fire the spell, and forgetting to really put evocative descriptions in there. And our game will be so much better if we all can do this. So let's all make a commitment to help ourselves and help each other to do this. So, you know, when you take an action, you know, I want a really good description of it. I don't just want I attack with my bow. I want, give me something more than that. And at the same time, if I'm not giving you that, then ask for it. You know, if I say, oh, the orc swings his club at you, ask me for more. Remind me, say, hey, you know, can you tell me a little bit more about what's going on or something like that? And if you can get your players on board with this and you can have this kind of cooperative relationship where you're reminding each other to give vivid descriptions, you can start to build good habits as a group. Try to remember as a GM to set every scene. This is really important. So every time you start a new scene, whatever it is, don't forget to do some description at the beginning to set the scene. And, you know, I could do a whole episode on description. There's definitely a sweet spot. You don't want it to be too short. You don't want it to be too long. You know, if your players are getting bored, your description's probably too long, or they just have short attention spans. But try to focus on a few noteworthy things and describe those and kind of leave it at that. Don't describe every little thing. You know, go for evocative imagery, and don't forget senses other than vision. So things like smells or sounds or the feel of the wind on the player's skin, things like that. A great way that you can help to improve this particular aspect of your game is to write descriptions for your scenes and for your monsters and your NPCs ahead of time. Now, you probably want to try to avoid like reading a paragraph of text to your players. For most of us, it's going to be better to instead write a list of things that you want to mention in the description, like, you know, the color of the person's eyes or the smell of their perfume or the tunic that she's wearing, things like that, as opposed to writing out, you know, in paragraph form a description, so that way you can more kind of extemporaneously give those bits of information to the players. However, if you're really good at writing evocative descriptions and you're really good at reading them in such a way that your players aren't bored with it, then go that route, you know, whatever works for you. But if you take the time to come up with these ahead of time, and I would recommend writing something down, because the point of this is not only so that you have the description ready, but you're more likely to remember to give the description if you took the time to write it down. Even if you just think in your head, and I've done this, like even if you just think in your mind ahead of time, okay, this is what this NPC looks like. Okay, I've got it. I've got the image. It's very easy to just, in the flow of the game, to just completely forget to give that to the players. Where if you write it down, you can have it there in your notes, you know, and then you just have to train yourself to constantly look at your notes and see if there's anything you need to be giving them as far as information. And even if you don't read the description, just the fact that it's there will remind you, oh, I need to describe this thing. And for a lot of us, it really helps to think about these things ahead of time and write down some notes of what does this tap room look like, or what does this battlefield look like, or what does this strange environment look like and smell like and feel like and sound like, right? Again, if you are not thinking of these things ahead of time and you're just pulling it out of your butt, it's going to be pretty pedestrian stuff. So again, this kind of falls into prep. And another part of this is do not let your players interrupt you. If you take the time to come up with a good description, you're giving them the description, do not let them interrupt you with the thing they want to go do. Now, if you are running in person, this is really easy. All you do is you're giving your description, player jumps in, interrupts you, starts to say something, you make eye contact, you hold up your finger, you know, the just a minute, and you continue your description. It's a little trickier online, but don't be afraid to interrupt them back and say, hey, I'm not done. You can do your thing after I'm done with the description. And again, this is just a thing of respect. You know, we as GMs, we try very hard to respect player agency and respect their characters and not, you know, tell players how their characters feel and not tell players what their characters do. And on the other side of the coin, the players need to respect the GM. You know, when the GM is talking, the players should shut up and listen. And, you know, a lot of times it's not a thing of they're trying to disrespect you. It's just they had this idea that popped in their head and they want to do it right now. Or they want to try to get an action in before the NPC finishes his monologue or whatever. And you don't have to put up with that. You know, it's cool that they're excited, but you just got to remind them, hey, I'm not done. You'll have your turn. And I find more and more I use initiative in any game I'm playing. Any time you know, players start jumping in with, oh, I want to do this, oh, I want to do that, I'd use initiative, because I've found, and this was more from the player side of the table, but I found in some games I've played that the GM would be setting a scene and a certain player would jump in with, oh, I want to do this thing. And the GM would let that player do the thing, whatever it was, probably just to shut him up. And then the GM would finish the description, and then the rest of us who were being polite and waited till the GM was done, then we're like, well, we want to do these things, and the GM's like, okay, roll initiative. So it's like basically that the precocious player is getting rewarded because he got to do something before initiative, while everybody else, now it's initiative and we don't get to do that thing. And basically that GM probably doesn't realize it, but he is training his players to interrupt him so that they can get this thing, you know, cast a spell or get their weapon out or whatever they want to do before the actual initiative happens. So I noticed this as a player and it really bothered me. It really kind of made things unfun for me. So I've been very aware of this as a GM. And what I tend to do now is anytime that starts happening, I don't let the player do the thing. First, I'm like, let me finish my description. And then I'm like, okay, we're rolling initiative. You know, you're not getting to do stuff before initiative, just because it keeps it fair. And then that way everybody gets an equal opportunity. And this is something, I think it was in the DMG for Dungeons and Dragons that I read that I really liked. Do not be afraid, whatever game you're playing, do not be afraid to use initiative outside of combat. You know, the whole point of initiative is to give everybody an equal amount of attention from the GM and give everybody an equal amount of time to do the thing that their character wants to do. And it can be really easy if you have a table where you have some more extroverted players and then you have some more introverted players. It can be really easy for the extroverted players to always get the spotlight because they're being loud and they're saying, me, 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 this is what I want to do. And this other player is maybe just a little more shy, or maybe they're just polite like me and are willing to wait their turn, and then their turn never comes because the GM's attention is monopolized by, you know, this other player. So, you know, initiative is a great way to avoid that, even in non-combat situations. And it's fine if you do initiative and half the players are like, I don't really have anything I want to do. At least they had a chance. So again, this whole thing with coming up with descriptions ahead of time, this falls into preparation. Obviously, it takes time to do this. If you don't have time to come up with everything ahead of time that you would like to, then focus on the most important moments and the most important NPCs in that session. And then another thing that can help with this, if you're having problems with not having enough time to prepare properly and you're trying to do these things and you're unhappy with the results in game because you're not having the time to prep and you just can't find more time, you know, you're busy, you don't have more time, then one thing you can do is to shoot for shorter sessions and maybe have the sessions more often, maybe not. But, you know, obviously the shorter a session is, the less time you need to prepare for it. So if you're playing like 6-hour sessions, maybe try playing 4-hour sessions instead. Now, this really depends on the amount of role playing that's going on at your table. The more role playing that's going on, the less material you need for X amount of time as a GM. And I've really seen this in action lately with my new D&D group, who are all just amazing role players. There are sessions where I almost don't have to do anything as a DM other than just kind of role play NPCs and answer their questions and react to what they're doing, because they'll just take the story and do things with it, which is awesome. I love players like that. So in my D&D group that I'm running right now, I can easily run 5-hour sessions with them, no problem, because there's a lot of RP. So a lot of that 5 hours is them interacting with each other, them interacting with my NPCs, things like that. So less preparation goes a lot farther in that game. In contrast, some of the Numenera groups I've had in the past, I could not run that long of a session because there was a lot less RP and I needed more material. I needed things for them to do because they'd just kind of sit there and look at me if I didn't give them something. So I needed to do a lot more prep for a 3-hour session with one of those groups than I need to do for a 5-hour session with my D&D group. So, you know, this is going to vary based on your players and what's going on. But as a general rule, a shorter session will require less prep. So if you're really having problems, just go for a shorter session. And also, one other thing I want to note in this topic about descriptions is a picture should not replace a good description. So be really careful if you use images as visual aids in your game. Showing a picture of a dragon does get that image across very quickly and easily, but it's not nearly as evocative as a good description. So images like that that you use, whether it's pictures from your bestiary or your monster manual or something you found online or whatever, they should enhance your descriptions. They should not replace them. Another area that you can focus on as far as avoiding GM laziness is your NPCs. Really focus on making interesting NPCs with depth and complexity. Once you have an NPC solid in your mind, you can roleplay that NPC all day long. And the more interesting and developed your NPCs are, the more the players will want to roleplay with them. And the more they roleplay with your NPCs, the longer the material you have prepared is going to last. And with my current D&D group, again, who roleplay a lot, there's been many times where I had the amount of material prepared that I thought I needed for a session, and it ended up getting me through two, even three sessions, because there was so much roleplaying going on. So finally, the last thing I want to talk about here is just awareness. So the biggest step that you can take as a GM to fight GM laziness is just being aware of the problem. Monitor yourself and your sessions. Pay attention to what's going on. Pay attention to how your players are reacting. Ask them for feedback after the session. Ask them, do you feel like I was prepared? Did it seem like I didn't really know what was going on? Pay attention to how you feel about it afterwards. You know, maybe even take notes, even write down, I really wasn't happy with this session. I wish I would have done X, Y, and Z a little bit more beforehand because I feel like I didn't really represent my story as well as I could have. Note those kinds of things. And the next time you can look at that and say, oh, you know, I need to spend a little bit more time on this kind of stuff so that I can be happy with what happened. So you will notice when you're being lazy, and you're going to work to fix it as long as you're paying attention and you have this awareness. The goal here isn't to become a perfect game master overnight. The goal is to constantly improve, to identify your weak areas, and to shore those up. If you work on your GMing and you put some effort into it, your players will notice. And if you have really awesome players, they'll even tell you. So just last week, one of my D&D players told me that it's obvious to him that I prepare for my sessions, and he really appreciates it, and he's having a blast. And, you know, it feels really good when your hard work is noticed by someone. So that's awesome. You know, that made all the prep I did more than worth it. For me, I mean, I'm not looking for that from my players. I honestly, it's all internal for me. For me, coming out of a session happy with how it went and happy with how I performed and feeling like I represented my story well, you know, that makes it worth it for me. That makes the prep worth it. You know, when a player says, hey, I noticed that you come prepared and, you know, the adventure like really shows that, then that's like icing on the cake. But they won't always tell you that, you know, so you don't want to go expecting that, and you don't want to hinge your feeling of success as a GM on the players actually telling you. Even if you ask them, they won't always tell you. So everybody comes to the table as a GM with a different talent and skill set. You know, we can't all do accents and cool voices. I can't. We can't all act. I can't. But we can all take what we've got and make it better. Ultimately, a GM who hones his craft and evaluates himself and works to improve will be a better GM than one who can do cool accents and act, but just kind of wings it and doesn't really put any time or effort into it. I learned this lesson very well as a musician. I've learned that in music, innate talent only takes you so far, that hard work and skill developed over time trumps talent. And an example of that from my own life is I'm a trumpet player, and I have a lot of just innate talent for it. When I learned trumpet, I learned it very quickly. It came to me super easily. For years, I was the first trumpet in my band, and it wasn't because I practiced more than other people. It wasn't because I worked harder than other people. It was just because I had just this natural talent in it that other people didn't have. However, again, that only takes you so far. And by the time I was in college, I was not the best trumpet player in the band anymore because there were people that worked a lot harder than me. I love the trumpet player Chris Bode, and judging by his sound, I think it's possible that I have as much inborn talent as he does, but Chris Bode plays his trumpet 8 hours a day, every day, and I don't. And that's why he's a pro, and I'm not. So my point here is, don't get fixated on the things that you can't do. You know, if you're like me and you can't do convincing accents and you don't really know anything about acting as far as being an actual actor, you know, don't let that hold you back. Most GMs can't do that. What you can do is you can work hard and you can evaluate yourself and you can improve. And again, if you do that, you are going to end up in a much better spot than someone who can do accents and can act, but they don't really put much into it. That's pretty much all my thoughts on lazy GMing. So, you know, this is something, again, that the more we run, the more this can happen just because we get so comfortable and we get in ruts, and it's easy for these things to kind of creep up on you and you don't even realize it until way later, and you suddenly realize, wow, I don't GM anything like I used to, or you see yourself on a recording and realize that you're being very, you know, minimalist as a GM. There are things that you can do to improve your GMing personally, and working on those will help you avoid backsliding or degrading as a GM or becoming lazy. And again, your players will notice and they will thank you for it, even if they don't do so in words out loud. All right, so that is going to wrap up episode 20 of Game Master's Journey. You can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can find me on Google Plus, just look for Lex Starwalker. And you can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit the website at starwalkerstudios.com. There you can find lots of helpful links, and you can find a link to our Google Plus community, which is a great place to hang out with other GMs and find out what's going on with the show, things like that. Also, again, I stream my games on Twitch, so you can find links to my Twitch channel at starwalkerstudios.com. And I also put all my games on my YouTube channel, so you can find that on the website too. If you enjoy Game Master's Journey and you'd like to help support the show, help us keep the lights on and all that good stuff, a great way that you can do so is to try a free trial of Audible Books. You can get a 30-day free trial from Game Master's Journey, which will include one free book. A book that I highly recommend is called Leviathan Wakes by James S.A. Corey. It is the first book of the Expanse series. It's listed as a space opera, but it's much more in the realms of mundane science fiction than a lot of science fiction, and especially a lot of space opera. So it's very realistic, more near future stuff. In the series, we have settled most of the solar system, but there's no, you know, warp drives or time travel or any of that crazy stuff. It's a really good series. I really like it. I'm actually reading it for the second time now. I'm reading the first book again. And there are four books out so far, and the fifth one is coming out very soon. And the Sci-Fi Channel is making a TV series based on it. And I've heard some people describe it as Game of Thrones in space. So it's really awesome, really awesome book. And you can check that out from Audible for free. And you can find all the details to that at starwalkerstudios.com. So once again, I want to thank you for listening to Game Master's Journey. I really appreciate all of my listeners. I hope that you find the show to be a resource for you as a game master and a player of any and all tabletop RPGs. So I will see you next week for episode 21, Game On!
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.